listener production. When that insurance rolled around 1 year later, I didn't pay it because I thought, oh, I'll put it off till next month. But in that time frame, I crashed the car. I wrote it off. I would say I was probably about $70,000 in debt.
Insurance may not seem like the most exciting topic, but as you could tell from the gravity of that comment, we have a story for you today that will prove why it is incredibly important. Hi, everybody. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome to the Keep Your Wheels On podcast, where you will hear from real people talking about mistakes. And we're all capable of making mistakes, right? But those that resulted in either them crashing their car, narrowly avoiding a situation that could have been much, much worse. And along the way, we'll also be joined by some experts about how you can do your best to avoid ending up in a similar situation. Insurance. I'm a huge believer in you need to be covered. That's a great example of why. 70 grand in debt.
Oh, my God, I can't begin to imagine, and especially as a young driver, that's more than hex fees.
Exactly, and it'll take a long, long time to pay that off. To talk about it from an expert perspective, we're delighted to be joined by Tim Bennett from Finder. You might know him. He's been a journalist along the way, worked on ABC Radio. He's been in the comparison and insurance comparison game for over 5 years now. Before we even delve into this topic so deeply, Tim, why is this so important in your mind?
G'day, folks. Look, I grew up knowing that if you get behind the wheel of a car, well, you shouldn't unless you're fully insured. And the reason is just because the risks are so high. All it takes is for you to have one at-fault accident or even maybe at-fault accident to be kind of in the position that, you know, you heard earlier on where you could be tens of thousands of dollars in debt. The downsides are just way too large.
So at the very start of this episode, we heard from someone who'd ended up in a huge amount of debt with nothing to really show for it because of a decision around their car insurance. Let's meet her now.
Hi, I'm Angela. I had a major car accident when I was younger while I was uninsured, which meant that it ruined my life for years after that because I ended up in major debt. So when I learnt to drive, my parents didn't want a bar of it. So they organised 10 driving lessons and I had to do that before I was allowed into my car or their car, which was pretty smart, I think. My parents had bought me a $1,000 car. It was an automatic and it used to stall at lights, so it was definitely worth $1,000. I got my licence on my 16th birthday and then on my 17th birthday I went and got my red peas. So I was straight into driving. We lived out in Western Sydney at the time, so public transport was tough, and especially for a 17-year-old girl, I'd rather be in my own car. It meant freedom. I was seeing someone who lived a 30-minute drive away. I also grew up in different parts of Sydney, so I had friends all over Sydney that I was able to go and see. The first car that I bought for myself, I probably went a bit overboard, so I went from a $1,000 bomb to a $30,000 European Peugeot, which was not my smartest moment. I did go and get a loan for that car. I think I was probably about 19 or 20 at that time. My money situation was not great. I liked going out and having new clothes, and they were giving away money pretty much at that point in time, so they were very generous. I think they offered to loan me up to $50,000. I definitely shouldn't have been buying a $30,000 car at that point in my life. It was definitely a step above of what I needed at that time. In order to get a loan for a car, you have to have insurance on it when you purchase it. When that insurance rolled around 1 year later, I discovered it was extremely expensive for a European car, especially one that was $30,000. So I didn't pay it because I thought, oh, I'll put it off till next month and I'll put the insurance back on it then. But in that time frame, I crashed the car quite badly. I wrote it off.
far out. Tim, Lisa and I got so many questions about this, all right? Can we just go with something really simple? When you get a new car, what are the kinds of insurance that you need to get?
With any car, whether it's new or secondhand, new to you maybe, there are, I guess, four different types of insurance, and it's probably worth just breaking them down quickly. From the bottom, there is compulsory third party. Now, compulsory third party is a legal requirement everywhere in Australia. It's called different things depending on which state you live in. And in some states, it's included in registration, and in some states, you buy it separately. So in New South Wales, for example, it's called a green slip, and you purchase it separately from an actual insurance company. And in most other states, it's kind of bundled with registration. It looks after personal injury claims that might come from someone who is injured in a car accident. It's really, really important that that happens, because that covers pedestrians, cyclists, anyone, even if they're not in a car. If you're driving without CTP, you're driving uninsured and unregistered. So there's criminal negligence involved. So you got to have that. Next up is what's called third-party protection. Third-party insurance basically covers the cost of another car that you might hit. So compulsory third-party doesn't cover, say, the Mercedes-Benz that you run up the back of. Third party, as far as I'm concerned, is that kind of what I would consider compulsory. Oh, I should say third party does not cover your car. So if you're driving around in a, say, a $30,000 Peugeot and you crash a car and you've got third party coverage, you won't have to pay for the Mercedes-Benz, but you will have to pay for that Peugeot. So that can get you into a bit of trouble if you're financed, which we'll get to in a second. Third party fire and theft is exactly the same, but if you happen to have the car stolen or it gets damaged in a fire, it can also be covered. And then finally, you've got comprehensive insurance. This is the creme de la creme. This is the really expensive stuff, especially for young people. And that covers your car as well as the other car that you might hit, whether you're at fault or not. Now, in Angela's case, she needed comprehensive insurance as part of that loan, because if something did happen to the car, the comprehensive insurance would have paid off her loan. So that, if you're buying a new car and you're financing it, is probably where you're actually going to need to get that really, you know, top-end insurance, and why it's so expensive.
I know exactly how expensive it is, obviously, having a 19-year-old son.
I'm in the same boat. Yeah. I've got an 18-year-old and one who's nearly about to hit the road, so I get this. Yeah.
So we bought him a suitable car. It wasn't $30,000, but he's a tradie, so we bought him a suitable car. Mm-hmm. And to insure that as an 18-year-old, it was basically 25% of the cost of the car, over $5,000.
Crazy.
Because the injury rates and crash rate incidents of boys on the road, they're killing themselves 4 to 1, their crash rate incidents is so much higher, so they actually have to charge a whole lot more for it.
So, Tim, that kind of leads us where Lisa's gone there, to this whole point about why it's expensive for young people. I mean, she's rattled off some really important statistics there that sort of set that up for your answer.
It's fundamentally just how insurance works. So insurance is a risk mitigation strategy. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, taking on all the risk of something going wrong, I pay someone else. It's kind of like a collective savings fund. And then if something does go wrong and I need to pay a whole bunch of money, they will pay it instead. What they do whenever you get an insurance policy, with a few exceptions, in Australia, health insurance, for example, is a bit different. But generally, you will be underwritten. And what that basically means is the insurer looks at you, looks at your risk profile, and decides, look, you are either risky or not risky. And based on that level of risk, we will charge you a higher or lower amount. If you're riskier, you're going to get charged more. And the point you made is a fair one. Young men get into more accidents. It makes them riskier and it makes them more expensive to insure.
People, and probably maybe this is a parental thing where we need to teach kids around the importance of budgeting, looking at insurance costs when you buy a new car and factoring that stuff in is so important, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, if you can't afford insurance, you can't afford to drive. It's as simple as that. And I know that sounds a little bit callous in a way, because I do understand how important a car is to someone's life, you know, especially when they don't live near a train station. I had that experience growing up. Having a car meant that you could visit friends, you could have relationships, you could engage in the world in a much sort of more thorough way. But if you can't afford to get that thing insured, then you're just risking your financial well-being as well as your mental well-being. Right? You know, being $70,000 in debt isn't good for your head.
But also, I mean, weekly, if you look at, you know, tradies, first-year apprentice, you know, for them to actually insure their car, that's $100 a week. you know, that's not petrol or repaying the loan for the car or anything like that. That's purely $100 a week for insurance.
Is that system broken then, Tim, you know, for young people? I mean, this whole notion of, I don't know why you would choose not to be insured, but clearly this is a thing they're kind of confronted with or a decision that they sometimes make.
No, and that's the point you make is a good one too. Sometimes people don't have a choice. You know, if you are a tradie, you need a car. My brother's a chippy and he needs his ute. And if he doesn't have it and he doesn't have it on the road, he can't make a dollar. And those early years of his apprenticeship, he was not making the kind of money that really justified the cost that that was running up. Mm. But he had to be there for it. Is the system broken? I think it's fundamental to how insurance works that it's always going to be a case of the riskiest people are the ones who pay the most. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be that those risky people are the ones that have the least amount of ability to pay. Mm. The only way to fix it, I think, would be through policy and some policy choices. I mean, we do make that decision in other areas of insurance, like health insurance. It is highly regulated and, you know, riskier people in the health insurance system would be, say, older Australians. Mm. Older Australians don't get charged as much as they would say in the US because of those regulations.
Okay.
And younger people end up paying a little bit more, but that's another issue. But it's an example of where if we wanted to make it, I guess, more equitable, we could.
Let's come back to Angela now. We've established between the pair of you talking here and some statistics that Lisa bounced around that young people are clearly often in situations where they're more likely to have an accident. That's a factor of this conversation. Now, Angela mentioned that she'd written this new car off. So I think we all know what happens next in this story, but let's find out a bit more about what transpired.
So back when I had that accident, I was extremely social. I was going out partying with my friends all over Sydney. So I was driving out to Penrith. I was living in Wollongong. I was driving into the city. So working full time. So I had a really busy life. It meant that I was driving home late at night a lot of the time. I was driving back from Sydney back to Wollongong a lot, probably at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, not on the most favourable of roads, out the back of Picton or Appin or places like that where there's animals and not much lighting. A lot of possibilities for things to go wrong. The day I had the accident, I had gone up to Sydney. I was hanging with my friends and we had gone to a big dance festival that day and night. And then we all went back to one of my friends' places in Penrith after the event. We were all just hanging out there for the night, and during the day on the Sunday, they kept drinking. I stayed awake with them. And then on that Sunday afternoon, I had that dread feeling of, oh, crap, I've got to go to work tomorrow. I've got to get home and get some sleep and prepare for that. So I decided to head off probably about 2 p.m. in the afternoon to drive home. I was actively tired and I knew that, which was stupid in itself, but I thought that I had done this run many times before and I'd be fine and nothing would happen. So I remember actually calling my sister-in-law and being like, hey, you need to talk to me because I'm pretty tired. So she stayed on the phone with me for about an hour of the 2-hour drive. I don't really know what happened. I know I had made it 3/4 of the way home. I was on Picton Road, which has high stats for big accidents as it is. So, you know, lucky me, I became one of those stats. I just remember at one point I was driving and then the next moment I woke up and I had hit a tree. The first thing I hit was one of those wooden stakes on the side of the road with reflectors on it. And then I had hit the end of the metal barriers that protect you from going over a cliff or something like that, hit that head on, and then that's when I really woke up and I thought to myself, this is how I die. So once I hit that barrier, it actually flipped the car 4 times. And when the car finally came to a stop, the front 2 tyres were hanging over the edge of like a cliff. and the back two tires were holding on to that metal barrier that I had just hit. And there was a tree that had come through the windscreen and pinned against the passenger side seat. So had I've had someone in the car with me, they absolutely would have died. I was really, really lucky. I remember it first happening, and I hit the first thing, and I knew that was how I was going to die. And so I actually just let go of the steering wheel, and I kind of made peace with it. I let go of the steering wheel, and I was like, okay, well, that's that. I couldn't get out of my door because it was jammed shut. The roof had caved in at the front. I had to climb through the back window, through all the broken glass, and then out onto the boot and then onto the road through the car like that. But I got out of the car and I was just like, my biggest concern was, how am I going to get the car off this cliff? Not about my health, not about possible back injuries, not about anything like that. And then the next stupidest thing that I thought of was all my clothes had been like thrown for like through the bush for the last like 25 meters. I was like, how am I going to reach all my clothes in the trees? Like, just really stupid stuff. Until the gravity of it really hit later on, I think, while I was sitting in hospital waiting for all like checks to be done and x-rays and stuff like that. I didn't actually think about the insurance side of things until probably the day after. So my parents came and picked me up from the hospital because I had no way of getting home. And we actually drove past the wreckers where the car was located, and it kind of really sunk in then, like, how badly damaged that car was. And I thought to myself, huh, I'm going to need a new car. And then the next day I was like, I've got insure. Oh, crap, I don't have insurance.
That is gripping, frightening on so many levels. Thankfully, no one was in the passenger seat. That's point number one. We're going to get to the insurance aspect of it. Clearly the shock around, you know, clothes strewn everywhere. And I've been nowhere near as full on as that situation she's been in, but I've been in an accident where the driver's door wouldn't open and you have to find another way out of the vehicle. And that, you know, the panic that can bring on.
I've been in exactly the same situation. Hmm. Whereas I was involved in a fatality when I was 22. There was a car driving the opposite way. We were following a SUV towing a caravan, and the car coming the opposite way sideswiped the SUV, the caravan, jackknife head on to me and three or four behind me. My boyfriend at the time, he woke up first. He was in the passenger seat and he come around to get me, and he was a big dude, and he put his foot up on the side of the car and started reefing the door open because it wouldn't open.
Wouldn't open. Mm.
And my first thought was, Sean, stop that. The insurance won't cover that. Like, the car was already written off. So I can appreciate the sort of stupid thoughts that went through Angela's head when she was thinking about clothes and things like that. But point one is she's unbelievably lucky to get out of how she described that. That was a really traumatic, really dangerous accident. Mm. And obviously when you're that tired, yes, talking to a sister was good, whatever. I mean,
just don't go. Just don't drive.
Just go for a power nap.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
You know, pull over. Yep, yep. 15 minutes, you know, is all it takes. Just go for a power nap. It's not worth it. We're only talking money here. That's why she's lucky. Mm. Imagine if she had a best mate in the passenger seat. So many things could have gone wrong. Just, it's not worth it.
Young people, Tim, making these decisions, right, where they could potentially put themselves into a fatigue driving situation. This is clearly something that insurers are mindful of, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's part of that risk profile that they build. And obviously, I don't want to victim blame at all, but it is something that young people are more likely to do because, you know, we've all been young. We've all understood what that's like. And sometimes you don't make the best decisions, especially if you're already tired. Mm. And that's why, you know, rules like I don't drive tired, I don't drive through flooded roads, I don't have a drink and drive ever are so important.
Would an accident like this make her ability to get insurance in the future even more expensive? Is that the kind of thing that hangs on like a record for you? What about that side of this?
Yeah, it can. So what happens is whenever you sign up for insurance, there's a series of questions that'll ask you as part of the underwriting process. And two of those questions are, have you ever made a claim? In the last, typically it's between 5 to 7, 5 to 10 years. It changes based on territory. But one of the other questions is, have you been in an accident or have you been had any convictions? So depending on the nature of what's happened, yeah, absolutely it can. Because what that does is it feeds into that risk profile that's built. And if you don't answer the questions truthfully, it can invalidate your insurance. So that's another piece that I would just never do, is don't lie on an insurance policy, because otherwise you're paying premiums for potentially nothing, because it just gives the insurer a really good reason to deny any claim.
Before we move on here to the next part of Angela's story, do many people statistically let their insurance lapse? And at what point do smash repairers or assessors, I should say, consider that a car is a write-off?
To the first part of that, we've got some numbers that fairly recently, as many as 5 people have actually ditched insurance policies or downgraded. So that could mean a few things. That could mean people going from comprehensive down to third party. But the last time we ran this survey, which was just a couple of months ago, as many as 1 in 7 people were driving, or at least telling us that they were driving without any insurance. Now, that's to say that they would have only had the compulsory level, which is really concerning.
Very.
Right? Mm. Even if surveys aren't 100% reliable, because what people say they do and what they actually do are often different, the fact that there is that many, even if you were to halve that and just be really charitable, that's still a lot of cars out there on the road that if they hit you, that person would have to, you know, pay out of their own pocket. So most of those people were saying that it was a cost thing.
Cost of living.
100%.
Mm. It's everybody's biggest thing at the moment. And if you can turn around and go, oh, I'll drive really safely and I'll save myself $100 a week.
Yeah.
Yes, they will save themselves $100 a week, but they'll end up in a lot more trouble.
Yeah.
And a lot more debt if anything does happen.
Yeah, and it's not worth it. And to the second part of that question around sort of what counts as a write-off, there are a couple of different types. There's what are called statutory write-offs, which is where you cannot repair that car to a state where it could be drivable. You know, it sounds like Angela's car was that. There's too much core body damage, or it just, there's fundamentally parts of the car that cannot be repaired. And then you've got what's called a repairable write-off, which is where the vehicle can be repaired, but it's not economically viable. And depending on which state you're in, there are different rules around whether you can drive those cars or not. But as far as the kind of value, if the assessor is actually the job title, finds that the cost of repairing the car would be 50 to 75% of the car's value, then typically you're in write-off territory. And it does depend on the nature of the accident, but that's typically where they start to call it unrepairable.
Angela described in brutal detail the accident, what happened to the car, seeing it later in the wrecking yard and so on. It certainly sounded like it suffered a lot of damage. Why don't we find out what happened next?
The car was a complete write-off. The entire engine had been pushed in, one of the wheels completely ripped off, every single window smashed in, the boot had been damaged and the roof was damaged from the multiple rolls. So basically that means that without the insurance to replace that car, it means I now have to pay out the loan on that car and then also get another loan for another car because I've still got to turn up to work in the mornings. First of all, I didn't really have the money for the $30,000 loan, but I also didn't have the money for another $10,000 loan to get another car. So it really started to sink in what a stupid mistake that was. So the debts from my first car, $30,000, I hadn't paid much off that by the time the accident happened, and then an additional $10,000 for the new car to replace that car. And then if you include my other everyday debts of being young and wanting a great life, I would say I was probably about $70,000 in debt. Being that much in debt meant that I didn't have a lifestyle at all. I went to work. I didn't really go out with my friends. I certainly wasn't driving around Sydney and going to Newcastle and all the things that I used to do before that point in time. I just didn't have the money. But yeah, for a couple of years there, it was very much down to the grind just to try and pay those debts off. I did move home because of the debts. It really cost a lot in my friendship circle and also my social events and everything like that. For me to be able to get out of debt on the salary that I was on, which was pretty minimum wage type salary, I ended up having to go into a debt agreement, which is one step below a bankruptcy. So it is an official way to register it with the government. And basically that means that they freeze all the interest payments on your different loans and they bring it all in together into one debt to make it easier to pay off. But that does stay on your record until A, you pay it all back. And then B, it does stay on your record for 10 years, I think it is. So it's like having a black mark against your name. You cannot get any more credit during that time. You can't get a personal loan. You can't get a $500 credit card. It really made life difficult when something that you weren't expecting comes up and you normally you'd just be like, oh, I'll get a $2,000 credit card and pay that and then pay it back. There was not that option at all.
So this is a takeaway for you if you're listening. If you don't do this, the ramifications are huge. So not only will you potentially end up with a debt that's compounded if you've got a university degree as well, you might have a HECS debt, plus you've got this left over. Angela's just talked about the fact that it's nigh on impossible to get finance anywhere else, and the kind of finance that you might be able to get will be hugely expensive, troublesome, you name it, not recommended. If, Tim, she'd been insured properly, I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, this sounds like the most obvious question, right? If she'd been insured properly, how would this have gone for her? The outcome at post-accident would have been very, very different from an insurance and claim perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So she would still have to deal with, you know, a bit of trauma, just the experience of going through that. But the financial implications would have been significantly less severe. She would have filed a claim with her insurance company and they would have paid out the cost of the write-off, which would have covered the debt. She may have even ended up with a little bit of extra cash on the side, depending on how much she had paid down already and her interest rates and whatnot, which might have put her in a better position to get a car. She may have even been able to, depending on her policy, got a rental car for a couple of days. So she could even go to work a couple of days later. Again, that very much depends on which comprehensive policy she would have had. Most importantly, though, she's not spending the next 2 years having to literally move back with her parents.
Well, she was saying more like 10 years. Mm. By the time like that, all that debt is written off and that black mark against her name for the sake of a couple of $100.
Yeah, and it's a really dramatic outcome, but that's exactly what it can come down to. A few hundred dollars for 1 month or the decision just to not drive for a month. And the next 5-10 years would have been very, very different. And she could have built up, you know, a bit of a savings. Because this is the other thing. She would have got to her 30s and had nothing saved, you know, in all likelihood, or mid-20s, depending on how old she was. And living paycheck to paycheck is hard work.
I'm reluctant to say this. Thank goodness she didn't hit another car or person. That is a positive. That is the positive here. What if that had happened? Then it comes back to, I think, what you talked about at the top. If you are foolish enough not to have third party and some of those sort of things. I mean, that's when it even gets even worse, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, so we've got to assume that she had CTP. So if she was registered, she would have had to have had CTP in New South Wales. So at the very least, she wouldn't have been open to litigation from someone who was injured or, God forbid, killed by an at-fault accident. So that could have been disastrous, obviously beyond even just the tragedy of the accident, hypothetically. But then even if she had that, if she had run into it, the thing is, it doesn't even need the whole thing is, you know, it's a Mercedes-Benz or a Maserati. It doesn't even need to be that anymore. You know, a run-of-the-mill electric car is still $60,000, $70,000. It doesn't take much to run into, say, another car. Maybe that could run into another car again, or there's some other property damage. So, yeah, if she didn't have third-party property or comprehensive, it could have been 2, 3, 4 times, 10 times as bad.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, what we were talking about, you know, her whole social life, I mean, that's unbelievably important at that age. Mm. It's not worth forsaking.
Yeah. Aside of the impact on her personally, from perhaps even a worry or an anxiety standpoint, that I think is what you're leading to there. How does this potentially impact her premiums, and just reinforced him why insurance is so important for young drivers?
I mean, her premiums are going to go up, and they would have gone up even if she had insurance. Mm. But that's part and parcel of just getting into an accident, unfortunately. Mm. But at the end of the day, money, in a way, I mean, this is a bit of an existential concept, but, like, you know, money is just a way to get well-being, mm. I guess, if that makes sense. Mm. You know, we chase money because we want to be happy, you know, and at the end of the day, maybe that's the thing that we should be educating children about, is not so much about what might happen, you know, in terms of the debt you might rack up. It's like, what if that happens? What do you lose? You know, you mm. lose your life, you lose your friends, you lose your, you know, your ability to travel, to make plans.
Your mm. well-being.
Mm. I mean, it's what matters to all of us, but we get, you know, a little bit older and a little bit wiser, and so we understand the link that those two, you know, the relationship that they have. So I guess to round it out, though, insurance, it's one of those, and this I hear this all the time, you know, people say insurance doesn't seem that interesting or fun, but I say it will be when it's just too late, or hopefully if it's just late enough that you realize the benefit of it. I think it's on us as, you know, older members of society who are uncles and mothers and sisters and, you know, fathers, who have the opportunity to let the young people in our lives know the real value of being safe. You know, it's a little bit of money now, but the amount that it could save you is just immeasurable.
I love the fact that you have highlighted here something that is not just the tangible stuff we've talked about, the financial impact, the impact on just having a set of wheels to be able to see friends and so on, but it is the well-being impact. And I think that it, from both of you, that is so, so important. I dare say Angela's attitude towards insurance today is now very different. Why don't we find out?
I have insurance on everything. I have house insurance, I have contents insurance, I have car insurance, full comprehensive. I don't go third party. I go full comprehensive. It is not something that I would ever choose to skip again, because the consequences of that are far, far worse than having to pay that annual fee. I haven't had an accident since. It really did make me pull my head in, I think, a little bit. I was very much of the opinion that I was a great driver, and that when you have the thought that you're going to die, definitely changes your opinion. I did not do big trips up to Penrith very often after that, nor did I ever drive tired again. That is something that is a hard no, I do not do anymore. I just had to get back on with life and start driving again. But I am super, super thankful it turned out how it did. You know, I have a lot of regrets about what happened, but I'm also really thankful about what didn't happen, you know. There's a whole heap of things that could have gone a lot worse, even though I nearly died. It certainly wasn't the worst that could have happened. Absolutely, always, always pay your insurance. If you can afford it, get the full comprehensive insurance. You know, if I had have had that accident and I had a veered to the right and had a head-on accident, not only would I have been liable for my car, I would have been liable for someone else's car and someone else's life. And that's huge. Like, the consequences of that, you can't comprehend that. So yeah, get insurance.
A very emotional Angela with some reflections with the benefit of hindsight. But I love, Tim, that she is just adamant now around getting the insurance, why it's so important. Can we get some key messages from both of you here to wrap this up? You're a mum. You've got kids who are young drivers, as you talk about. So, I mean, it's something you clearly...
I was probably not even great at this. And obviously, as I said, you know, my son's car is fully insured, fully comprehensive, all that stuff. Mm. It was expensive, but absolutely we were going to do it. The first day out he got his license, somebody ran into him. Somebody ran in the back of him. Mm. And, you know, I didn't even think to tell him about what to do when something like that happens. And it was just something that, oh, we're fully insured, it doesn't matter. But, you know, when he's had this incident, he come in and sort of said, oh, Mama, you know, somebody ran in the back of me. He said, it's all right. His car was a lot worse than ours. There's barely a scratch on ours, so I didn't bother getting his information.
Always get the information.
Yes.
Always get the information.
So that's the biggest tip. No matter what it is, even if it looks like there's no damage on anything, take a photograph of both cars or any cars, the situation, the area you're in, number plates, get as much detail from the other drivers, if there's other drivers involved, as possible, because that's all the information you'll need for insurance people when you, you know, if you ever, hopefully not, but if you ever have to use that.
Tim, I can see that you're eager to chime in here. Please do.
It's much the same. I remember just the experiences that I had, you know, when I was a young person and having trouble on the road and getting into accidents that were my fault, in fact, just even just running, you know, up the back of another car because I was stupid and not looking at the road when I should have been. And it just leaves you, if you haven't had that experience or had the conversation, it leaves you in a really, really vulnerable position. And unfortunately, if someone, you know, is malicious, you know, if potentially they freak out as well, it puts you in a really, really bad spot. So just speaking to that, I couldn't agree more based on my own experience too.
Let's finish then before we let you go with a couple of key dot points that you would like to say to young people today. I mean, this topic, when you look at it, might seem incredibly bland and boring, right? But it is far from that. And we would hope that our listeners would share this with other family members, with other young drivers, and make them understand just the gravity of a situation like this, how bad and how much worse it could be.
Yeah, that's it. Talk to people, talk to your friends, talk to your family. And also just recognize that you should be budgeting the cost of insurance in to any car purchase you make. You know, driving a car is not cheap. It's not even close. Even if you, you know, do pick up a, you know, a $5,000 or $10,000 car, I'm not even sure how much that buys you these days. You know, you don't finance it. The cost of insurance is part of that cost. It's the same as petrol. It's the same as maintenance. If you can't afford insurance, you can't afford to drive, or at least you can't afford to drive that particular car. So that would be the main financial takeaway.
Tim Bennett is from Finder, a great place to go from an insurance comparison standpoint, Tim, as we leave you today. That's worth going to, isn't it? Just to sort of compare some of the rates and what's out in the market.
Well, that's it. We've mostly been talking about just the need for insurance in the first place. But when, and unfortunately, young people don't have as many options when it comes to comparison because of their high risk category. Mm-hmm. But once you get to a stage where you don't have as high a risk category, it's really one of the best tools you have is to pay less for insurance. It makes it a whole lot easier to pay your insurance premiums on time. And there are deals to be had, but you do have to compare.
Tim Bennett, it's been fantastic to get you on today. And we're very grateful for you sharing your expert insights here on the Keep Your Wheels On podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
On the next episode of Keep Your Wheels On,
we look at some of the other types of vehicles that you could encounter on the road and why you need to be alert around them.
The amount of people that you see on their phones or eating their breakfast, and I'm serious when I say a bowl of cereal with a spoon, it's actually frightening for how common it is.
And we're joined by truck driver Kasherina Smith, or as many of her TikTok followers know her, Trucking with CJ, and she knows all too well what can happen when car drivers aren't sharing the road.
We are always driving looking at our mirrors. We're always trying to figure out where everyone is around us, but there are some spots that if a car just sits and hovers in that spot, we can't see them.
I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is Keep Your Wheels On. Keep Your Wheels On is a listener production brought to you in partnership with My Drive School. Hosted by me, Greg Rust, and Lisa Scaife. Audio production by Kelly Fulston. And executive producer is Todd Stevens.
The Keep Your Wheels On podcast was funded by the Australian Government.
Listener.